fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighting cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2019 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training, LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training, LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com, your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, 2019 will be the year to do it. Here's some of their upcoming schedule. On January 24th, an online class, Introduction to Tactical Thermal Imaging. February 2nd, the 2019 Midwinter Chiefs Conference, Tactical Thermal Imaging Lecture. February 4th through the 13th, the Texas Association of Fire Educators with Sean Blomaker of Max Firebox, and more details to follow. February 12th, Tactical Thermal Imaging, Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics, sponsored by FD Tactics Training. Details to follow. February 23rd, Burn and Learn with Max Firebox, Tactical TIC Training in Danville, Virginia. February 28th, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's the Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging Training at Mount Pleasant Volunteer Fire Department in North Carolina with instructors Terrence Shoemate and Thomas Anderson. Details to follow. March 6, 2019, the Louisiana Instructors and Firefighters Training Conference. Registration opened back on November 1st. The Brotherhood on the Bayou will host some amazing fire service leaders, Mike Dugan, Mark Von Appen, Sean Blomaker, and Andy of Max Firebox and KTF. Don't miss this one. The team will be teaching 7 4-hour sessions from the 6th to the 9th. And April 9th to 13th, FDIC 2019 in Indianapolis, Indiana. A general conference presentation that will cover the often confusing and complex areas of thermal imaging from purchasing to policy. This is not a sales presentation. It is an educational program that is designed to assist firefighters in understanding the specifications of fire service thermal imaging cameras and how that will affect their ability to perform on the fire ground. And remember, you can find Insight Training LLC's upcoming events on their Facebook page. Remember, Insight Training, your best bet for TIC training. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Five Alum Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm Steve Green, your host. We hope you all are well and eager to listen to another excellent episode of Five Alum Task Force. We have a wonderful guest for you today. That's going to be Chief Richard Gassaway. I'd like to remind you that you can find this podcast and our entire library of podcasts on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv, as well as on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Listen Notes, Podchaser, or TuneIn, and your favorite aggregator. Just search for Five Alum Task Force. When you visit our homepage, please remember to sign up for our newsletter so you'll be the first to know about new episodes, new blog posts, and other Dalmatian news. If you do listen to us via iTunes, please remember to rate us 5 stars. That helps raise our ranking and assists others in finding us more quickly. And you should do the same for SA Matters if you listen to the Chief's podcast as well. And of course, please be sure to like us on Facebook at DalmatProd and DalmatProdFire. If you'd like to share your interest with others and help a great charity, please drop by our storefront with our friends from Teespring. Just head over to bit.ly/Dalmatian store and choose from several t-shirts and mugs. And remember, a portion of the net proceeds goes to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And I am so pleased to welcome our guest, Chief Richard Gassaway, today. Rich Gassaway is widely considered to be a trusted authority on human factors, situational awareness, and the decision-making processes used in high-stress, high-consequence work environments. He has authored 6 books, and his contributions on situational awareness and decision-making have been featured and referenced in more than 400 books, book chapters, journal articles, and online publications. His government clients include NASA, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the U.S. Department of Defense, and every branch of the armed forces, including the United States Military Academy and the United States Air Force Academy. Corporate consulting and training clients have included ExxonMobil, Syn Crude Oil Refinery, Nuclear Fuel Services, Georgia-Pacific, Babcock & Wilcox, SGL Carbon, and Eagle Materials Corporation. More than 500 public safety agencies have relied on him to help improve their emergency scene safety and high-risk decision-making, including the New York City Fire Department's Incident Management Team, the Fire Officers Association for Los Angeles City and Los Angeles County Fire Departments, and fire brigades in England, the Netherlands, Belgium, Australia, New Zealand, and Hong Kong. Chief, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's a real honor to be here with you. I appreciate you reaching out to me and giving me the chance to get connected with your audience.
Well, thank you very much, Chief. It really is our privilege and honor to have you with us. I started listening to the SAM podcast about six, eight weeks ago when I happened to find them on the pop-up search. Once I started listening to a couple, I knew that I needed to reach out and have you, because the message that you deliver is so important, especially today as we happened to chat about a little bit before we went on air, that today, the fire scene has evolved to almost a completely different animal than it was back in my day when I used to respond on a pterodactyl and my chief would respond on a T-Rex. But back then, everything was different. And today, it's different once again. We know that the fire service evolves over the years, over the centuries. And yet today, with all our technology that we have, sometimes it's even more dangerous today than it ever was before.
For sure. Absolutely.
One of the things that I want to first discuss about that I heard on most recent podcast on your 10 top, and maybe we can discuss a couple of those, was the concept that one of these firefighters, when he was when you were interviewing him, he was in a bad situation, but he kind of knew that he was going to be there because of his intuition, he said, or that gut feeling. Yet sometimes our egos overpower our intuition. It's like that old little cartoon where the character is going to do something bad, and suddenly on his one shoulder pops up an angel that says, no, don't do that. You know you're better than that. And on the other side pops up the devil. Oh, go ahead and do it. Take that candy bar. No one's going to know the difference. And that happens in just milliseconds to us when we have to make a decision on the fire ground. How do we separate the concept of intuition versus ego as far as how you define situational awareness?
Yeah, great question. First thing I want to do is put some clarification to what can, I guess we should start with what intuition is, and then we'll put some clarification as to how people can trudge over it.
Sure.
Intuition is within your brain. You have a massive database. In fact, those who study this would estimate that the human brain's capacity of long-term memory is about 10 times everything on the internet. Maybe let that simmer for a moment. That's a massive database. But conscious access is only about 5% of that database, which means 95% of everything that we know or have learned or experienced is outside of conscious awareness, stored in places that we can't ready access. Intuition allows us ready access of sorts to that unconscious database. Mm-hmm. The thing about intuition is it does not come to us in the form of knowledge. It comes to us in the form of a feeling. We might have hair stand up on the back of our neck, our internal voice talking to us, trying to give us advice. We may get that gut feeling, but we don't necessarily know why, because it's coming from a database of unconscious knowledge. But it's trying to alert us, trying to warn us, trying to inspire us to do something that's really revolves around one singular purpose: survival.
Right.
And sometimes people trust their gut and listen to it, and sometimes they don't. And I'm as guilty of as anyone on this. When I'm teaching about intuition and the need to trust it, I often feel like a hypocrite as I'm telling people why, teaching why they should trust their gut, and explaining the neurological basis of intuition and saying it's important that you trust it. But then that little voice inside of my head is saying, yeah, if that's such great advice, why didn't you always trust it? Why didn't you always listen to you know, your intuition, which I didn't. And, it caused the problems for me quite a bit along the way, and not just on a fire ground, but in life and administrative decisions and things. And so we've got this database of knowledge designed to be helpful to us. And, I'd say it's pretty robust. It's, it's a big database, but sometimes we don't listen to it. And sometimes that reason is ego. Sometimes it's the mind, the person will think, I know better than my feelings. Mm-hmm. I know better than the voice inside my head. I'm smart enough that I can figure this out consciously. I don't have to depend on feelings to guide me. And in fact, imagine if somebody made a decision and somebody said, why do you make that decision? And they said, well, I just had a feeling. Some people just can't bring themselves to even admit that they would be trusting their gut or trusting their feelings. So in that case, maybe ego would cause them to overrun and not listen to their good internal judgment, so to speak. But there's some other possible explanations besides ego that could explain this. For example, ego is what I call a barrier to situational awareness. A barrier is something that blocks or prevents or impact situational awareness. So if somebody lets their ego overrun their intuition and does something counter to what their good judgment tells them, then that's a barrier to situational awareness.
Right.
But there are several other barriers that could also impact our ability to take the good counsel of our intuition. For example, one of them that I teach in my classes is called mission myopia. Mission myopia means you get yourself so committed, so dedicated to the accomplishment of the mission that you have set out to do. And sometimes your commitment to that mission has already happened before you even get on the scene. You know, I'm going to do this, whatever that is, forcible entry, fire attack, search and rescue, vertical vent, whatever you commit yourself to is going to be your task. And maybe it's been assigned to you already. Whatever you commit yourself to, when you arrive on the scene, it really doesn't matter what the conditions are. You're going to get that task done. That myopia, that narrowing of your field of view, different from tunnel vision, and if we want, we can talk about that, but this is a narrowing of your view to be mission focused and only mission focused, and that can cause you to completely ignore all the other clues in the environment that maybe that's not the right mission, or maybe the tactic that you're going to use to accomplish that mission that you already have in your mind that you're going to do is not appropriate for the circumstances, but you completely trudge over the circumstances because you're so hell-bent on the mission that you ignore the rest of it. So there are other situational awareness barriers that can impact this too. There's besides ego, there's bravado, there's denial, optimism. There's a variety of explanations. And I never really know when I see a video what an explanation is for why somebody does what they do. And that's why I reserve my comments about videos. People will send me video all the time. What do you think? You know, well, look at this. What do you think? And usually my answer is I don't think anything until I get a chance to talk to the people who were directly involved and get their perspective about what was happening. What a better medium all social media would be if people would stop throwing all their smack and judgment around about circumstances they know nothing about, but in their self-proclaimed brilliance, they think they can judge and throw hate and call people inappropriate names and put labels on them and their department, and they weren't even there. They don't know thing one about what was actually motivating any of the behavior that they're seeing in that clip. And I try to teach people not to do that. And every once in a while, I will just go on to the post and say, where do you people come from with all this judgment when you weren't even there? You don't even know the circumstances.
Right.
So there's to sum up the conversation on this, their ego is one of those things that can drive somebody to do things that run counter to intuition, but it's not the only thing that can cause that to happen.
Right.
So for the people on Facebook Live, and I see you coming in and I appreciate that. I think somewhere on Facebook Live, there's a place to maybe hit a like button or something that's, or just tap your screen. And I think it puts up something that says that that you like the conversation. I don't know exactly how that works. Yeah, there we go. Somebody just did it. Yeah, thumbs up. There you go. And actually, that will help other people. Thank you. Thank you so much. That'll help other people to find the live conversation. So, Steve, did that answer the question for you? Okay.
Yes, Chief, it did. It really did. Okay. I'm not sure why you didn't hear me before, but that's okay. No problem. We'll take care of editing that out from the final product. That's what electronic editing is a little better at. I used to do audio editing when it was on tape, and we have a razor blade and some special tape and two pieces of audio tape to cut and stick together. Yeah. But I think you brought up a great point, and I also think you added to that the point of what's happening on social media in the fire service. The simple word people are using, whether it's the fire service or Hollywood or whatever, is the trolling, or politics, the trolling. Those who sit back hiding in an anonymous ID, casting dispersions or judgments upon stuff they know nothing about. And we've seen this on a large number of topics in the fire service. Again, as you said, you see the videos, especially when these short videos come up on either Periscope or sent as part of a Twitter tweet or on an Instagram posting, it seems like a magnet that all of a sudden there are the trolls who come out and say, oh, you guys didn't know what the hell you were doing. You should have done this. You should have done that. They had no idea what the OIC saw with his or her 360, or what they found upon arrival, what the conditions were. Were there people trapped? Were there not people trapped, et cetera, et cetera? But that doesn't make any difference to them. They just run wild with their fingers on their keyboards to spew this hate and vitriol on us. And I think the most important message we can maybe give our listeners about non-firefighting, non-emergency situational awareness is, don't let that vitriol get to you. If you're posting to help something that happened, you're looking for answers, or you want to post so that other people can learn from a situation you were in, go ahead and do it. Know your facts and do it. And don't let those trolls get in your way or bother you, because there are a lot more of us who care about what you're posting and want to learn something or help you learn something by answering you. Yeah. And that's what you should focus on.
Yeah, there are a lot of people out there that are experts on their opinion. I think that's solid advice to encourage those who are trying to make the service better, not get frustrated and disappointed with the people who are just there to make themselves appear smarter and to tear other people down. When I see it happening, I either click out and say that I'm not gonna, even waste my energy in this feed.
Sure.
Or I will say something that says, unless you were there, you don't earn a right to have an opinion at this table. You can share your own experience, or you can contribute in a positive way to the conversation, but your opinion about what they did is not earned yet, because you don't know enough about what happened. And I don't share opinions about things that happen. I get asked all the time to share my opinions about this or that, or this video or this event or this current event or this firefighter fatality that occurred. And I even when I feel like I've got a teachable moment that I could share, I often reserve doing it because I don't want it to be construed the wrong way, that somebody thinks that I'm trying to make a point out of someone's near miss or someone's tragedy. It's too important to me to honor those people who are willing to put themselves out there and share things that have happened to them when it's on my feed, I protect those people who are my interview guests. Somebody throws hate at them, I will delete it and block them, and I won't think twice about it. And I'll get criticized for that. And God bless you and all your wonderful criticism. I'm a big boy. I got on big boy pants and I got thick skin. And I just will not let somebody beat up somebody who has honored me by sharing their story with me and had the courage to do that. So, but we can go on to other topics related to, right, to situation awareness. I veered us down the lane of trolls on social media.
But I think you brought up a good point, and I know that our mutual friend Chief Billy Goldfeder in the Secret List does very much the same thing. He make sure that when he publishes something about a close call, a near miss, or God forbid a fatality, he tries to give as many of the facts that he was able to glean from the initial report that comes out, and then follows up with his mailing list to enhance that information, as opposed to just, you know, making an assumption and publishing that. And to both of you, I say kudos, because of the work you do on such a serious and emotional issue. And again, even listening today to you, some of those stories on your top 10, which we'll get into in just a moment, I really was feeling those pangs in my heart for what several of those firefighters went through.
Yeah.
And this is fact. I mean, between them and you, you interviewed them. This is exactly what happened. And to hear what they went through and what they suffered really played very heavy on my heart this morning as I listened to that particular podcast. So let's get started. In time remaining before this break, we got about 8 or 9 minutes before this first hard break comes up. Let's talk about situational awareness and what you've glean from, let's say, these top 10 interviews that you were asked. And by the way, let's give a shout out to that gentleman who runs that podcast that you spoke about, Fire Rescue, because yeah. I've listened to several of his podcasts. He does a great job with it, so dedicated to the task. And yeah. you can look for him also on your favorite podcast platforms. Fire yeah. Rescue is what
yeah,
it's called.
The Fire Rescue Show, young man right. named Jared, is he's burning it up. He's a young man. I don't know his age, but I'd put him somewhere under 18 for sure. And he is absolutely digging the opportunity to interview thought leaders in the fire service and to share their experiences. And it was quite a pleasure to be on his show this past week. And I think it airs this week coming up. And so if you want another show to listen to, the Fire Rescue Show with Jared is a pretty cool listen for a young man really trying to make an early impact in helping especially people in his age group understand what firefighting is all about and the importance of the work that we do. Thanks for including that.
Right. So again, let's talk about some of the pictures that were painted for you in these interviews of your top 10. I didn't get to hear number 3, 2, and 1, but I'd like to discuss in general some of the facts so you can tell our listeners what some of these firefighters went through and the psychological processes that you discussed in that podcast.
Yeah, so the stories ranged from being involved in flashover events to collapse events. Two of them were actually line of duty deaths, and I interviewed people who were survivors of those events. And their connections to the message of situational awareness are just amazing. You know, I don't pre-screen them. I don't tell them what to say. I don't even know what they're going to say. We just roll the recording and I play the role of interviewer and say, you know, tell your story. And then in the process of telling their story, they make the connections to the issues of situational awareness and how they were impacted and things that they were thinking and actions that they were taking without thinking. And, you know, there's nothing, Steve, more powerful than hearing how someone almost died right from the mouth of the person who almost died.
Right.
And to hear them say, here's what I was thinking, you know, and one of them, the firefighter, I don't remember which of the top 10 it was, but it was Jason Corthell, who was at the time a lieutenant in Cypress Creek. They were ascending a stairwell on an apartment building fire, and the stairwell, it was an exterior stairwell made of steel and concrete, and it wasn't involved in the fire at all. And they were advancing a line up that stairwell to the third floor where the fire was,
mm-hmm.
and the whole set of stairs collapsed.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it wasn't even involved in the fire, but there must have been something that weakened them. The whole set of stairs collapsed, and he suddenly was him and another firefighter were trapped under a pile of concrete. Mm-hmm. I mean, point where he couldn't move, could hardly breathe. His radio was not clear from him. He couldn't call the Mayday. And to hear him talk about the things that were going through his mind at that moment and moments when he thought that he was going to die. And he's very surreal about sharing what it felt like and this sense of calm that came over him and how he, by his admission, he said, I prayed that God would take me quickly, that I wouldn't lay here and be in pain very long. And, you know, to hear these kind of stories from these people who've had these near misses, I mean, they're laying it all out there. I mean, they're just telling it exactly as it felt to them. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I ask often of these interviewers is, or these interviews is, after they tell these stories and how they almost died, and you know, eventually they go home. You know, they don't hang around the fire hall for, you know, 96 hours after that. Eventually they got up, you know, pack up and go home. And I say, when you go home, did you have a conversation with the people you live with? You know, your spouse, your kids, your mom and dad, whoever is important in your life. Did you have a conversation with them and tell them what happened? And you'd be surprised how many of them say, nope, didn't make any mention of it. Then I say, well, you better make a mention of it before they listen to the podcast. Because this is not probably the best way for them to find out about this for the first time.
That's for sure.
You know, they're very humble. They, I think some of them on the show actually, I think they feel embarrassed about what happened. And like, they think to themselves, you know, I should have let this happen. I should have been smarter. I should have been better. And you know, they're just very raw, very genuine, very sincere sharing of their experiences and their lessons. And I'm so thankful for them. And you know, there's over 100 interviews on the show. So even though the top 10 are, you know, arguably the best of the best, the others, they're all still really good. You know, you might have your favorite episode of a show, but that doesn't mean all the other episodes are bad. I mean, there's some really, really good interviews. People been struck by vehicles, apparatus accidents, shot, you fell through roofs, just amazing stories that they share.
I don't doubt it. I mean, we've seen those of us who follow the fire service, whether we're active firefighters or retired / disabled firefighters, we kind of never give up the ghost, so to speak. It's always a part of our lives. It's been that way with me since I've been out of active service since 85. But I think the fact is that in listening to your introduction to that episode of the top 10, you really gave situational awareness an excellent introduction or definition to the listeners. And that's what really hit me this morning as I was listening to it. And I said, you know, I got to bring that up in our interview, is that I think some people who may be listening now think situational awareness is just looking around. It's like looking both ways before you cross the street is situational awareness. And in some ways that's true. I think you would agree.
It's part of it.
But I think for those of us in fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement, and some of the industries that you've worked with, especially, you know, I know you just returned from another time up north in our wonderful neighbor next door, Canada, in teaching some of the oil crews, mm-hmm. and the natural gas production crews, what to do and what their situational awareness must be because of the dangers that they face at every turn. So how would we, as we finish up this first segment, how would you define situational awareness for those of us in these kind of jobs? I won't say just firefighting, but we'll expand it to in these kind of jobs that hold a certain amount of danger and, let's say, severe challenge to us.
Yeah. So let me first put the frame as to, you know, the audience that I speak to is anyone. It's not just first responders, but anyone who works in an environment that is high risk, high consequence, time compressed with changing conditions.
Right.
If it meets those four criteria, then there's a real good chance that learning something about situational awareness and high-risk decision-making processes could be very helpful to somebody when they're in that moment of great potential consequence. So let me give you the definition, then we'll go to the break. Situational awareness is the ability to perceive and understand what is happening in the environment around you in relation to how time is passing. Because as time passes, conditions change, and as conditions change, then so does awareness. And then, hopefully, and this is really maybe the most challenging part, but yet one of the most important parts of situational awareness that most people don't give much consideration to, and that is the ability to accurately predict what's going to happen in the future, and to do that in time to prevent a bad outcome. So let me put all that together as one collective statement. Situational awareness is the ability to perceive and understand what is happening in the environment around you while being mindful of how time is passing, and then hopefully be able to make accurate predictions of future events in time to avoid bad outcomes. And to teach how to do that, people think it's so much easier than it really is, which I that's where I was at one point in my life. It takes me almost 3 hours just to teach how to do that. It's not as easy as just paying attention. Even paying attention isn't that easy. People think that it is, but it's fraught with so many potential situational awareness barriers, distractions and interruptions and bright lights and noises and mental things that can impact your awareness and make your mind drift away. And it's been quite an interesting journey for me to learn as much as I have on this topic. And I'm so thankful for the chance to share it. So I'll turn it back to you and we can do the break.
All right. Well, that's just amazing. And so what we're going to do is, you folks on Facebook who are listening to Dr. Cassaway, stay there with him. We're going to be right back on our show in just a moment, right after these words. Please stay tuned. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lane, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. No matter where we live or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief, wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and cool towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make cool towel your answer to keeping cool. You're ready to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the lights are out, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But stop. It's not all right. To keep you and your family safe in the event of a fire, we're advising you to close before you doze. Close your bedroom doors when you go to sleep. Why? Because closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, which provide trapped occupants more time for help to arrive. And closed doors can slow the spread of the fire, increase oxygen levels, and decrease temperatures dramatically. You've invested in smoke, fire, and carbon monoxide detectors. You've even practiced Edith drills with your family. Now learn another important way to protect all of you. Close before you doze. Also remember, if you are able to escape, make sure the last one out closes the main door. Remember, close before you doze. This message is brought to you by the UL Fire Safety Team, closebeforeyoudoze.org, your local fire department, and this podcaster. And welcome back to this special episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders, with our guest today, Dr. Richard Gassaway, one of the foremost experts, for lack of any other word I can think of, on situational awareness. And in our first segment, Dr. Gassaway spoke about the concept, what is situational awareness? He gave us a hint of a couple of issues that he's dealt with and spoken with firefighters about. And in this segment, we're going to talk about some actual interviews that he's conducted that were part of his top 10 interviews over the years with firefighters about, I'm not sure if they're even all firefighters, the ones I heard so far had been firefighters on situational awareness. Then I will have one question for you on that another concept on the podcast you titled Mental Rehearsal, which I loved.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the top, some of the top 10, and then we'll go into the mental rehearsal.
Sure. Is there a particular one you want to have a conversation about, or just share?
Just think the gentleman who talked about the first one, I think was number 7 or number 8, who brought up that concept of that gut feeling and intuition that we touched a little bit on in our first segment.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, in all, I won't say in every episode, but in many of the episodes, we end up having discussions about gut feelings, intuition, the internal voice, talking to people. So that's a common theme that run through these near miss interviews. And people will see that as they listen to these, you know, you're getting those firsthand experiences of people who said that their intuition told them to do something, and then they either did it or they didn't do it. And a lot of times, because it's a near miss, it's something that they didn't do that, you know, looking at it in hindsight, they wish they would have trusted their intuition or trusted their gut. I don't know exactly which episode it is that you are making the reference to, but I will reference one of them where I think it was in Lynchburg, Virginia, and I interviewed three members of the fire department there. And I was in Lynchburg and I was doing a program, and we ended up getting a conversation about this near miss during the program. So I got with them after the program and I said, hey, can we schedule a time to share this story out, to a bigger audience? And the three of them came on and I interviewed them. And One of the really solid connections to that gut feeling for this particular incident was that they had firefighters inside this large, almost like Victorian style house, very big downstairs, very big upstairs, a little confusing on the layout because of the size of it. And they were conditions on the first floor different than conditions on the second floor. So there were some conflicting reports, and the incident commander was parked where he could kind of see the exterior and the conditions from the outside. And then as the report of the conditions were not lining up between the two, it caused the incident commander to get a bad gut feeling about what was actually happening, because he had the first floor reporting one thing, the second floor reporting a different thing. And then from the outside, he had what he was observing. And this is a, I guess you'd call a success story of trusting the gut and intuition, because this commander, for reasons that he couldn't really put a solid explanation to at the time, decided he was going to pull everyone out, do the evacuation, go defensive, and because his gut was telling him something just isn't right about these conditions. And he made that order, and I don't remember how the radio conversation went between the interior crews and him. As my memory goes, you know, the crew where the conditions weren't so bad were like, well, why are you ordering us out? The conditions aren't that bad here. And so this commander had to, you know, stick to his guns, trusting his gut, and stick to the order to come out, even when it didn't necessarily make sense to those on the inside. And he did. And those fire conditions changed so rapidly that those firefighters on the inside barely made it out. I mean, they did, but this commander said, had I not trusted my gut and listened to my intuition and made that call, which was uncomfortable to make because I really didn't even understand why I was making that call at the moment that I was, and stick to it, we could have probably had some serious injuries or fatalities. It was truly that much of a near miss that they, you know, when they came out and got out, you know, it all out and accounted for, they realized just how lucky they were that if this incident were just a few moments longer, it probably would have ended in tragedy. So credit to the incident commander there, credit to the interior crews for taking the action that the incident commander wanted. Sometimes, yeah, as you know, Steve, sometimes there's a little pushback there from crews that you work out. It's like, we almost got it. We're starting to get a hit on it. You know, just need a couple more minutes. Nice. And you know, I mean, none of us want to give up on the fight, you know, and that might be a little bit of the ego driven or passion driven or mission driven kind of drive there. But they, you know, they complied and they came out, and truly just in time. And then, like the one with Jason Corthell, when he's going up the stairs, he had no intuition that going up those stairs was a bad thing to do.
Right.
You know, the stairs were completely intact. They weren't involved in fire. They were made of steel and concrete, and they're just advancing the lineup. And all of a sudden, wham, there he is, you know, in the blink of an eye under thousands of pounds of concrete, you know, and he was hurt bad. I mean, he was off work for a long time with, with fractures and surgeries and pins installed. And in fact, the other person involved in that incident never went back to work. Even though he physically recovered, he never returned to the job. That was enough, you know, to end it for him.
There was another one I remember now that, it was three crews. There was a crew in the second floor. There was a crew in the first floor, and there was a crew in the basement, and the basement was reporting just a tiny light smoke, but no heat. It was cold in the basement, but situations were changing in the second floor and in the first floor. I remember that one. I think that was like in maybe number 6 or 7 when the chief started, or the OIC started calling for some changes. The guys in the basement said, no, it's fine in here. It's cold. We have nothing down here. A little tiny bit of haze of smoke, and that was it. And I guess maybe, I'm not sure if that was Lynchburg, I don't remember, but I think the IC finally told people to get out, and they got him out just barely.
Yeah, that's the Lynchburg incident that I'm talking to. I kind of, until you mentioned it, you know, because when I was making the top 10 list, I didn't go back and listen to the actual interview. I just went to the downloads and, you know, took the most downloaded to get that top 10 list. Right. You're right. There were crews on all three floors, and the basement was the one reporting the least of the conditions, with a little more on the first floor, or a little of that. I don't know. I can't remember. I think the worst of the three conditions, I think, might've been the first floor. The second wasn't too bad, and the basement wasn't too bad. And so there was a lot of conflicting information there among the crews, and the incident commander then has to try to mentally process all this. And, you know, say, you know, try to figure out, well, what's going on here? And when it just all didn't fit and things were looking worse from the outside, you know, he just pulled the trigger and said, you know, that's it, everybody out. And again, it was just in time.
Right. Well, you know, that's one of those situations where if we had gone simply by experience, we may have said, well, we're going to expect this must be a basement fire that went up the Chase or went up the Flue or something like that. And yet now we had a completely different situation in front of us. And luckily he went with his gut. And by doing so, he saved probably some firefighters from, like you said, severe injury or possibly a fatality.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes when those commanders are trusting their gut and they're ordering crews out, sometimes the crews can get pretty upset about that.
Absolutely.
Because they think that the commander is questioning their abilities. And that's not the scenario.
That's the last thing the commander is doing.
Right, exactly. The commander is not saying, come out because you're not worthy, or come out because you're not good enough to get the fire out. But from the inside, it can feel a lot like you're in the Super Bowl. And, you know, you got 90,000 fans watching and the coach just pulled you out of the game and made you sit on the bench where everybody can see you now sitting on the bench. And, you know, nobody wants that to happen. But when the commander is ordering a crew out because of conditions different on the outside versus inside, or the commander with their many, many years of experience in incident management is getting this intuitive feeling, you know, a firefighter in the moment might not be happy, but I would hope after the fact they might go back and say thanks, you know, that
absolutely,
for putting my well-being first so that I can, you know, go home to the ones who love me. And although, you know, I have been in the position of having to make those decisions, and I can tell you that I didn't always feel the love of my crews when I had to make those decisions to, you know, to either not make entry on a fire that should be defensive, or to change our tactics from offensive to defensive, or from interior to exterior. You know, those are tough calls, and the incident commanders often know that they're going to get some pushback, and that will keep some of them from making the call. You know, I've had people admit that to me, is I didn't want all the hatred and the guff that's going to come. So I just let them continue when I knew they shouldn't. I just let them. And then that contributed to a near miss.
Well, I think also that as we open the show with the fact that the fire service has evolved so greatly in the last 30 to 40 years, and we've gained so much knowledge, so much new equipment, so much new technology, and some of our officers have been in the fire service that long, some of our great leaders, and they've seen what's happened when an incident commander has not made that call based on tuition because of that concern about the guff he would get or the pushback he would get when the firefighters came out when they thought they could handle it. But then we've seen the result of leaving those firefighters in too long, and we see those in the pages of our trade journals as line of duty deaths. And we've seen that with collapses, outside collapses, wall collapses. We've seen that with inside collapses, floor collapse, with firefighters sent to the basement. And I think that leaders today, because of all the education that's available to our officers today, our command officers especially, that they know, they feel for the most part what is the right situation and what is the wrong situation for those frontline firefighters to be in. They're willing to take, a lot of them, I think, God willing, most of them are willing to take the guff and the pushback and make that right call when they have that gut feeling that that wall is soft or that roof is getting soft and it's time to, you know, as a matter of fact, a good friend of mine from New Jersey was an acting battalion chief this past summer. He was called to a restaurant fire. They get to the scene and you could see through the window of the restaurant, there was a little fire at the oil cooker. So he sent his best guys on the roof and said, cut me a cut right in front. And they did. They radioed back, we got fire chief. He says, okay, go back 30 feet, give me a circular cut. And they do. They call him back and says, we got fire chief. He says, all right, do me one more trench cut at the rear. And he says, we do, Chief. We got fire chief here. He says, get the hell off the roof. We're going defensive. And that's what he did. And it was a good thing because shortly after they got all their water streams going, the inside collapsed and they wound up with a natural gas fire as well when the pipe broke. Mm-hmm. So, and when I was talking with him about it, he kept saying, I lost this building, this strip center. I said, you didn't lose anything. All that was just brick and mortar. All those firefighters came out okay, well, went home to their families after the shift was over. That's what you got that night. You got lives that were saved. And and the brick and mortar can do something else. But he just knew that seeing that much fire in the roof that quickly for just what looked like a little tiny fire in the oil cooker, in the fryer, just didn't make sense. And so he said, let's go. We're off.
Oh
God.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and it was the right call for him to make when you, because I could see the whole video. He had the whole video from a guy who shoots it. And there's no doubt. There was no doubt that they had no chance the way this fire went through the chase and up through the loft. It just was there. And that was it. You know, it was gone before they even arrived on scene. And that's what they have to do. And they have to have that, as you said, situational awareness to put all those blocks together that they see. And then kind of like push the enter button and come up with, see what comes up on the screen for what do I do when I see all this, and push the enter button of the brain and it comes up and says, pull everybody out.
Right. Well, you know, to be able to trust intuition in that moment, it takes two things. It takes courage and self-esteem.
Right.
And, you know, the courage to make the call and then the self-esteem to endure the potential criticism that could potentially follow. And, you know, for a firefighter to speak up to their superior and say, hey, I think conditions aren't right for us to do this, this assignment you've just given me. You know, maybe the commander doesn't see the conditions that the firefighter who did a 360 does, comes back, tells the commander, I don't think these are the right conditions. Well, that takes courage and self-esteem. Takes the courage of the firefighter to speak up, takes the self-esteem of the commander to be willing to accept that kind of input in the moment of, you know, of high risk and stress, and to listen to that firefighter's concern of, you know, what is it? What do you see that I don't see? Why do you have this concern? And, you know, sometimes it might be a new firefighter that just doesn't, know what level of risk is acceptable, and they're just, you know, they're just scared because they're new.
Sure.
But you can see it's somebody who's experienced, and they come up and say, I've got a concern about this. A commander with a balanced self-esteem and should take heed to that warning and that advice. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And I've interviewed both sides of that story.
Wow. It is amazing when we think about how much power and control that OIC has to deal with. And I think sometimes we don't think about it. We just think, oh, that's the chief. And that's, you know, he or she just wants to push us around. But you know what? I don't think sometimes those of us who are just frontline firefighters really appreciate the weight of what's sitting on the shoulders of the IC or a line officer.
I agree completely. And the one thing that is really surprising, disappointing to me is that, you know, we train firefighters. You work in teams of two, teams of three. You go interior in teams. And then we get on the scenes of these working incidents, and a lot of them, the incident commander is alone. And that's with a capital A,
right?
Alone. To manage all of the radio traffic, all of the strategy, all of the tactical priorities, to process all that information under all that stress, making decisions under time compression alone. It's almost like a setup to fail.
Yeah.
And you know, the problem is the more times people do it successfully, the more confidence they get that they're that good at it. And, you know, I look at the information processing of an incident and the volume of information and the speed at which that information is coming and the complexity of that information. And honest to goodness, there are some times that I look And I said, you had a successful outcome, but that was luck. That was pure luck. There were things happening faster and information coming at you quicker than you could possibly capture and process and comprehend and use to make predictions. You know, you can have terrible situational awareness and still have a great outcome. We call that lucky. I have seen, and I have been, I don't want to just think it's other people. I have been lucky where my situational awareness was completely eroded and I made my decisions and it turned out great. And I patted myself on the back and said, look how good I am. Look how smart I am. And then after the fact, as more information come in, I'm like, I had no idea. And then I just kind of like take this deep sigh of, man, dodged a bullet, was lucky there. You know, and then how many of us ever want to admit that we had successful outcomes because we were lucky? We want to believe that we had successful outcomes because we're that good at it.
Right.
And, you know, and there is some that are that good. And there are some that are just blissfully happy, but very lucky that they haven't had a near miss or a tragic event. And, you know, I hope they never do. I hope luck stays with them for the course of their career. You know, when I'm teaching my class, I say, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a little luck on our side. But if we're going to make high risk, high consequence decisions that could kill ourselves or kill others, let's see if we can program out a little bit of that luck and replace it with a skill set that could actually improve our high risk decision making. And that skill set starts with situational awareness. You know, that strong awareness is the foundation for good decision making. But again, you can have horrible situational awareness, nothing, and still make great decisions because you can luck into those outcomes.
Right. Well, let that segue us into the little part, since we don't have a lot of time left, on mental rehearsal. And I think you brought up some good information with that. I know you were talking to a group of workers from some sort of a chemical company. Mm-hmm. You gave them, started them with a scenario. You see a rupture in a pipe and you have a lot of methyl ethyl kill you fast pouring out of it. And that just caught my ears and my attention to say that. But I think it was a great way of catching their attention as well, to tell them that you have to be able to think in advance, what would you do if such and such happened?
Yeah.
And I can say that in my life, ever since I've been out because of my injury, I've always been still attached. I've always carried a BLS bag in my car. And fate has many, many times brought me to be first on the scene of some sort of an emergency. And what I constantly do as I'm driving around, before I even saw this, was I would say, okay, what happens if that truck had turned over when it made that turn and hit that car coming down? How would I call it in to our local fire service 911 number and give them the sit rep for that signal for that MVC? And I do that constantly because I want to know that I can still keep my head in the face of an emergency, because I work very hard when it's happened to do so. Many times I am the first one on the scene and the only one on the scene, other than some bystanders, until fire rescue or EMS arrives on the scene. Sometimes it's just LEO shows up first and aren't a lot of help other than for traffic and things like that. So I think when I heard this from you, I think this is something very, very important that we can stress for the fire service as well, and the other services that you teach with, is being mentally prepared in advance of an emergency.
Yeah. So the concept of mental rehearsal is imagining yourself in a high risk, high consequence environment that isn't really happening. You're imagining it. You know, you could even, like, if you want to watch YouTube videos, you could do mental rehearsals by imagining yourself in the midst of what is happening in that video segment. And don't, if you do that, don't say, well, I would have never done what they do, or just imagine yourself immersed in a situation and then think your way through it. If this happened, what would I do? If this happened, what would I do? If this happened next, what would I do? And to think that through. And as you think that through, you know, we talked at the beginning of the show about long-term memory storage, most of it outside of conscious awareness, your every mental rehearsal is the storage of a script, a storage of knowledge of what would I do if. And if you rehearse enough things, you'll eventually actually be responding to some of the things that you have rehearsed. And when you do and get there, what you're going to think to yourself is, this is not that big a deal. I already know what to do. I've already rehearsed this. I've already thought about what would I do if this, what would I do if this, you know, the last thing I think we want to do is in a high risk, high consequence environment, arrive and be totally surprised. Like, oh my gosh, I never expected that there would be somebody trapped inside of the house that I responded to. What will I do now? Well, if you've done mental rehearsals of structure fires with entrapments and the things that you would do and what would guide your decisions and where you would start your searches, and all those mental rehearsals become stored scripts and subconscious knowledge that you can then tap into. And not only will it give you knowledge, but it might even keep you calm, because you're not going to get your freak on when you say, well, I've already rehearsed this. You know, that's what Solomon said when he landed that Airbus on the Hudson. He'd mentally rehearsed that many, many, many times. You know, he was a glider pilot, so he would be up in his glider, and he'd like, what would I do if I was in an Airbus that was gliding because it didn't have any power? How would I maneuver it? How would I steer it? Where would I land it? He had mentally rehearsed while in the peacefulness of his glider what he would do if he ever lost both engines on his Airbus. And then he did, and look at the outcome. It was flawless because of his mental rehearsals. His mental practice of the what-if scenarios put him in a position of not being like so surprised and caught off guard. This is something he knew what to do. Now, he was under a great deal of stress, and he had an amazing performance, but that wasn't luck. That wasn't luck. That was based on rehearsal. Even though he'd ever only landed an Airbus one time on water that day, that was not a lucky outcome. That was a practiced and skilled response based on mental rehearsals.
Well, I would urge our listeners, if you have not heard this podcast from Situational Awareness, it's called Mental Rehearsal from Dr. Gassaway. And in that podcast, he has a clip of the recording between Captain Sullenberger and air traffic control. And if you want to talk about someone who can speak clearly and calmly under the worst possible duress that you can imagine, you need to hear this clip and hear Captain Sullenberger. It was just amazing to hear it again. I guess I had heard it before, but listening to the podcast, I went back and played it several times, just to hear how calm, how direct, and how devoted his talk was, his radio traffic was with ATC. It was amazing.
Yeah. It truly is. And again, a lot of that comes from rehearsal. I'm sure he rehearsed. What would I say? How would I say it? How would I keep my calm on and not let my freak get on? Because you know, if you get your freak on, causes a release of a whole lot of chemicals that changes brain function, and a lot of times not for the better. You know, and pilots are trained pretty heavily on these things of how to keep the calm on, using breathing techniques and different ways of keeping themselves at an even keel during those most stressful situations. And I'm sure his mental rehearsal contributed to his outward calm demeanor for both his co-pilot, which helped him, for air traffic control, which helped them. You know, if air traffic control would have got their freak on, that would have probably impacted him.
Oh, sure.
Like just like on fire scenes, if a dispatcher gets their freak on because of what's being told to them on the phone, and then they convey that stress over the radio to the responders get stressed based on the, you know, dispatcher getting freaked up about it. So, you know, one of the things when I'm training dispatchers, I do a class for dispatchers. I say how important it is that you be that voice of calm, even if you know on the other end that what they're arriving to is going to be chaos. You don't need to convey chaos through your voice. You be calm. You help keep them calm, all, you know, so that they can think their way clearly through things. and how important that is. And again, for dispatchers, mental rehearsal can help them through that.
Right, right. All right, well, listen, before we have to go, I want to, did any of your listeners on Facebook pose any questions for you?
Well, you know, today's my birthday, so what I got posed was a whole bunch of happy birthday announcements, and no questions, but dozens and dozens of scrolling happy birthdays. You know, today would be the only day that we would have that as something that we would have to contend with on the recording of the show, which I'm very thankful for everyone's birthday wishes. But as I was talking to you, I kept seeing them scrolling and scrolling and happy birthday, and but no questions.
All right. Well, then we'll add to that, and thank you very much for your time today and wish you a very happy birthday. We also want to give a shout out to another friend whose birthday is today, Captain Joe Starnes. He took a little illness over the last weekend or so, but he's making good progress. We send him our best wishes and prayers for a full and speedy recovery, and wish him a very happy birthday. And Chief Gasway, I just can't thank you enough for the time that you've shared with us. I know you got a very busy schedule. And thanks to your wonderful office manager, Carol, for helping me out at the last minute when I needed it yesterday. Sure. She was terrific, and I wouldn't have been able to be prepared for this podcast without her assistance.
Well, thank you. I'll pass that along to her, and the best wishes for Joe as well.
Thank you very much. And listen, I hope we can have you back again. I think there's a lot more for us to discuss and share with both our listeners from your listeners on Facebook and our listeners on the podcast, and give them a little more of what the situational awareness is all about.
I'll look forward to that. Thank you.
All right. Well, folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned. You are listening to 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
608 to 9104.
Could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve. Well, 2019 started, and most of us said, Happy New Year. Sadly, and very unfortunately, for our brothers and sisters in blue, it has not been a Happy New Year. Over the last probably 5 to 6 weeks, at least one law enforcement officer for each of those weeks has lost their life. It's been, for most, a violent ending to a life of service and dedication. You know, in the fire service, we call ourselves a family, And we are. We truly are a family. But we have to remember that part of our family includes our brothers and sisters in the police force, our brothers and sisters in EMS, and really, when you get down to it, our brothers and sisters who serve this country so bravely in our military. So when one of us falls, especially in the line of duty, it's a pang in the heart of each and every one of us, or it should be. And I hope that none of you who are listening, when you hear sad news such as this, say, well, they're cops, you know, they're that's what they're there for. No, because just as easily any one of us could fall in the line of duty or succumb to cancer or something else. And I don't think your loved ones would want them to brush that off too. Oh, well, they knew what they were getting in for. We who bravely serve our communities, our homes, our neighbors, our citizens, our states, our country, do so knowing the risk that we may face. That is true. But that doesn't mean when one of us is lost that it diminishes our value and or our valor. So I ask you to please, when you hear that a member of our family has fallen, you too will mourn them and pay them honor and respect, just as you would wish to be done for you. May we all be safe and continue our service. God bless. And this is my view.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force. News and issues for today's first responders. We would like to thank our guest, Dr. Richard Gassaway, for joining us to discuss situational awareness matters. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast streaming services? Just search for 5 Alum Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 and 19 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at @cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod or dalmatprodfire, and stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog at our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.